the quality control is there. You know, it's actually in our hands now, the detailer, the draftsman, the project managers, to emphasize our responsibility to just make sure that we're looking at it from all angles.
Hello, innovators. I'm Todd Wyant, and welcome to the Bridging the Gap podcast presented by Applied Software Graytech Group. You're invited to join our conversation to model the future of construction innovation and the digital transformation adventure of this great industry. My guest today is Edward Garcia. He's a seasoned professional in the field of building materials, currently serving as the senior engineering manager for Synergy. With a rich background in project management and a keen focus on innovation and technology integration within the construction industry, Edward brings a wealth of knowledge and experience to the forefront of architectural advancements and efficient building solutions. Welcome to the show, Edward.
Hey, thanks, Todd. Appreciate you having me on.
Yeah, absolutely. So let's get started with how you found yourself in this industry to begin with.
Yeah, absolutely. So back in 2007, I've been doing this since 2007, so that kind of dates me there. Not too bad, though. However, I had a scholarship to go play college football, and I tore my knee. So I had to pivot, and I found myself framing houses on the weekends. I found myself saying, ooh, it's hot, right? It's hot out here in the Texas weather especially. So I said to myself, how else could I do this? You know, stay in the construction field. You know, I know how to build it with my hands. How can I utilize this? And so I found myself going to 2 years of degree, 2 years of schooling for architectural and CAD operator. And I found myself doing this for the last 17 years or so. From there, I did homes, residential homes for a company called Grand Homes here in the Dallas-Fort Worth area. And slowly found myself in the playground industry, awnings and canopies, walkway covers. And then this one time we decided to take on a stair project, and I fell in love with stairs and rails. Something about it, just all the custom work and the thought process behind it. It's just a new world that I enjoyed and I continue to enjoy. And it's just something that architects are pushing forward more, to use the stairs, you know, not having to take the elevators. So that's something that I really enjoy. So I was working for a company that did canopies and awnings and walkway covers, and we decided to challenge ourselves. So we did a stair and rail project. And from there on, I just fell in love with doing it. There's just a lot to it that a lot of people may not imagine. The complexity, the custom work, the coordination with other trades. There's just so much to it. And it just really makes you think about the creativity. And with architects these days, you really have to figure out the form and functionality, but also giving them that aesthetic look that they're looking for.
Mm-hmm. How have you seen the industry change over the last 17 years? What's been some of the kind of big change markers?
So with technology advancing, right? You know, water jet, plasma, 3D printing, molding, just all those different types of avenues that we have now. I think the sky's the limit. You know, there is no limitation of a design or creativity, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You know, it's almost like we're in a Tim Burton movie. And the architect's just wanting us to explore it. And that's such a beautiful thing to do, right? And so I think that's the biggest thing, is really having the other trades, subcontractors, really expand themselves as well, right, with their skill sets. I think that's a really good thing, though, overall, as an industry. It just really pushes us to the limit.
Mm-hmm. How have you noticed the integration of that tech stack helping to transform the industry compared to practices, you know, from maybe a decade ago?
Yeah, one of the biggest things that changed for me was utilizing 3D scanners. Mm-hmm. It took the real world field conditions and not having to be there, so to speak. You know, you could just send someone out that could survey, get the information for you, collect it with point clouds, bring it back to the office, let our team extrapolate it, and then actually have the virtual world in front of you. Being able to see that in front of you in the computer is just an amazing thing. It's not to say don't go to the field. By all means, I still champion to make sure you go out to the field, you know, get the boots on the ground, being able to see the field conditions and learn, because on the job site, you learn as well with situations that arise. However, being able to see it in the computer, adjust your models to it, seeing what you don't see necessarily in the field, because you can actually zoom in, pan around, and actually collect the data, delete, remove points that you didn't see in the field right with your eyes. It's just a really good way to, a good practice anyways, that we've adopted here at Synergy.
Mm-hmm. How does that help facilitate the better decision-making and maybe create more efficiency in projects?
Yeah, absolutely. Like you said, efficiency, the quality control is there. You know, it's actually in our hands now, the detailer, the draftsman, the project managers, to emphasize our responsibility to make sure and just make sure that we're looking at it from all angles. You know, when you're on the job site, you're just kind of there and you're looking at everything really quick, I would say. And I don't like the word real quick, just more so you're there and you don't get the time to really absorb it, mm-hmm. right? As you would as if you were in the office, you're able to sit there and hone in, dial in for the next 8 hours, and it comes out with a better product because you're able to adjust in the field. From the field, able to adjust in the computer and make those old saying of measure twice, cut once. But you're able to put it together properly in the model and then create those fabrication sheets and then send it out to the fabricator so that they can make a really nice product that in turn, hopefully, turnkey will install properly in the field.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the things that I'm really fascinated with in the construction industry is just the amount of change that has hit the industry over the last several years. What ways have you seen kind of the shift from maybe the more traditional to more, you know, modern current approaches impact project timelines and quality?
That's a great question. There's so much, right? You know, just technology is just happening so fast. So many improvements. You know, one of the biggest ones is AI. That's something that we're exploring where, you know, we used to have individuals print paper and you would sit there and you would mark it up, you know, with a red pen, with a highlighter, making sure it all is captured on the sheets from what was on the model. It still happens, right? But now we're able to utilize that technology, 3D technology, that we have the 3D model. It's in an atmosphere virtually that we can just pull dimensions, you know, and then you take the scans, you're able to superimpose it, and you can see the impacts, whether negative or positive, and actually have the opportunity to take advantage of opportunities that you didn't see happening. And then check all the parts, pieces, and then being able to, again, have that take advantage of everything coming together properly in the field. And so with AI, what we're looking at doing is trying to utilize a software where it will pick up codes. So we're not having to spend so much time with going back and seeing those codes, but having a software that will run and scan the drawings mm-hmm. and pick up those key annotations, those nomenclatures to make sure that we already have those on the drawings. It expedites the checking process. And then in turn, the efficiency of the drawings that are being populated for the client, we are more satisfied with what they're getting.
Interesting. How do you see the AI wave coming into construction?
Yeah, it's definitely going to be something that we're going to have to work together with. And I say it in such an interesting way. I never said it out loud, but you have to work with AI.
Yeah.
It's
a partnership.
Exactly. You know, you wouldn't have thought that, you know, I wouldn't have thought 10 years ago, I'm going to have to work with a computer you know, that's artificially intelligent, that more than me, so to speak, right? And you yourself thought I would say,
yeah,
they have this algorithm that can work out situations faster than we can.
For sure.
And so I think it'll never replace humans, so to speak. I don't think so. It has to be hand in hand. That you have to have somebody tell that AI to simulate something. That's the way I would understand it anyways. I could be missing the mark, but I don't think it's something that's going to be a very powerful tool for us to use.
Yeah, I fully agree with that. So how do you balance then the right approach between leveraging all the new technologies that are super exciting, like AI, that can create these efficiencies, make us go faster and further with less people, with maintaining the proven traditional methods that have been effective? They still work. There's, you know, still being leveraged. How do you strike that right balance?
Ooh, that's a very good question, Todd. I'd like to think the way I'm utilizing it and the way I would see it happening for my industry anyways, with stairs and rails, right? So to speak, just speaking for that industry, it's more so going to be a quality control. It's something that's going to really have like a safety mechanism in place. Mm. You know, it's something that we're going to go through every day as we do every day, right? On a daily basis, we go through meetings, we go through notes, we take our drawings, meet with the client, RFI it. You know, there's just so many scenarios there, but I just think it's there that when you have all those different mediums together, that hopefully AI can more so scan it, more so read it, or again, come up with some algorithm that will make sure it checked off all the check boxes for you that you need to make sure that your product is, or your project is running according to plan.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. One of the phrases that popped into my head while you were just talking was AI and tech in general should be an enhancement, not a replacement.
Yes. Totally agree with that. Yes.
Yeah. Nice. So one of the avenues that comes with technology is the change management aspect of it and helping to kind of overcome maybe some resistance to change within the organization. How have you found kind of proven methods to help overcome that resistance while fostering this culture of kind of continuous learning and adaptability?
That's a great point. Great question. I'll give you a testimony. So in our industry of stairs and rails, you know, we're ordering a lot of glass, and glass has lead time. You know, sometimes 4 weeks, 6 weeks, and you don't have that that flexibility there to wait, right? You don't have that luxury to wait for the stair to get installed, for the rail to be placed. And so sometimes you have to pull the trigger a little sooner. However, then you have the grace period where you can scan, and you put the glass, you order the glass based off your scans. And so with that being said, a lot of detailers, I would say, that have not been exposed in 3D technology, they don't trust it. You know, it could be a 30-second off, but it's a 30-second off to a detailer. Mm-hmm. And that's huge, right? We do have, you know, tolerance, industry standard tolerances with glass in this scenario. You know, hole sizes where brackets need to enter into a hole of a glass. However, you know, you take a 3D scan, you pull all the dimensions on it, and you come up with this really nice skeleton guardrail system that's out in the field. You superimpose it over your 3D model, and, you know, you're talking fractions, a little bit out, or a slope, a degree off. Sometimes we're very hesitant to not pull the trigger on that glass. And the 3D technology is there, though. You know, it's telling you, you can move forward. You do have the tolerance to do it. However, some don't. Some resist that change to do it. Some want to do it the old-fashioned way. And there's nothing wrong with that, by the way. It's still proven that it's one of the best methods, but some want to go out there with the tape measure or a template with a piece of paper, actually physically draw that angle on that slope And that's one of the biggest things that I see as challenging is trying to adopt that new technology. Again, like you said, resist it. And so the testimony with that is prior to doing the 3D technology, we would go out and do hand sketches and templates. Well, then when the 3D came into play, we used to probably reorder glass 20%. So say, you know, you have 100 lights, you're ordering about 20 lights again, right? That's a lot of money that adds up towards a project, towards your overhead, your revenue, your bonuses, salary increases. And when it came to doing the 3D scans, it probably reduced it probably to about 5% or less. You know?
Wow. So that's big.
That was huge. And of course, you had to do the initial investment, right, of getting a scanner, right? But the payoff, the dividends of what you saw probably paid off in one project.
Yeah.
You know? And then after that, maybe the second project, you know, just a little bit of exaggeration, but no, I think probably the first project, you pay it off. But then after that, it's all profitable from there.
The industry is struggling with a communication problem and a lack of interoperability. This is causing 25% of data being recreated and almost $300 billion loss due to bad communication. Great Tech Group believes that is a problem. So they created Data Connect, an easy-to-use, no-code platform that connects critical ERP systems with cost management to form a single source of truth to empower better communication, decision-making, and project efficiency, delivering the ultimate business outcome of being on time and on budget. Visit ASTI.com/DataConnect to start saving time and money.
Yeah. Yeah, that's awesome. So let's kind of get into some more kind of the nuts and bolts. What processes do you follow to ensure that the architectural plans are translated accurately and into engineerable design?
You're going to get me in trouble. No, it's a really beautiful relationship, architects and engineers. You know, I always say that the end user, which is the client, is the most important person. I want to make sure that my product is what they wanted, right? Mm-hmm. However, there's some nuances to it that form and functionality and structure have to come into play. You know, I definitely want to get you this nice slender stringer. However, there is a lot of engineering that criteria that have to be that come into play. You know, you have a torsion upload, a download, dead load, just fixed connections, drifting of the building, vibrations, seismic calculations, and that list that you have to really look at. And we do our best, though, however, again, just kind of a pull and tug relationship that we want to make sure and give you the best options available for you, though, you know. We don't want to go in there and say no, right? That's definitely not what we want to do. We want to make sure and tell you this is understood that you want this look. However, we have option A, B, and C, you know, and we definitely try to appease the client. We want that to be the number one goal. However, we also want to educate and make sure that they're understanding that we are doing our due diligence. We are the specialist. You know, there's some trust there, right? There has to be trust that you came to me and I'm working with you and I'm going to give you the best product. And we're going to do our due diligence to make sure that we can do that for you. And so I think when we look at our process parallel now, when we look at a set of drawings, you know, there, again, there's form, functionality, instructability. Constructability, but then there's budget too, right? Mm-hmm. And making sure that we, again, are educating them that there is a vision that you'd like. However, I need to work within these numbers. And it's not that we don't want you, right? It's not like we don't want to give them what they want. We just need to make sure that safety also is there as well.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it sounds like you're intentional about bringing everybody kind of into the process in those early stages of design to ensure that feasibility and efficiency with kind of open conversation, which is awesome.
Yes. Yes. That's a really good way to say it. The way I always say it to my team, it's kind of like we're dating. You know, we meet each other for the very first time and we're starting to get to know each other. What do you like? What do I like? And then you're, you know, then you make it official and you're a couple. There's a contract initiated, you know. Now we're going to go actually steady. And you just have to be able to just hold hands and compromise, you know. I think that's the biggest thing too.
Yeah. No, I think that's huge. And it's a piece of the equation that is often missed in construction, which leads to a bunch of misunderstandings too. You know, being able to sit down at the beginning and can define the terms of the relationship,
right,
I think
exactly.
is huge. Have that DTR at the beginning.
Exactly.
It solves a lot of right. problems later.
Yeah. And it sets up the expectations too, you know,
mm-hmm.
you know, there's yeah. no, I'm not saying surprises, you know, obviously in the dating world, you want surprises. Those are really awesome, right? To see those things come up, but not in construction, so to speak. You know, you have those change orders and then you have those really hard, tough conversations that you don't want to have, but you do have to have them, unfortunately, right? You know, it can only go so far in that analogy, but that's what I like to say anyways, that yeah. you want to try to get to know who they are, give them what they want, and make sure we can do it in the best practical way for both parties.
Yeah, I like it. Can you think of a project where that collaboration between all those different stakeholders, architects, engineers, and fabricators really led to an innovative solution?
Yes. I mean, every project, we definitely engage with every single one of those, right? Those stakeholders, like you said. Specifically, you know, we want to make sure that we're all on the same page. You know, communication is key as well in this industry. You know, if the left hand is not talking to the right, then obviously, you know, we have a huge problem. And those can lead to repercussions, domino effect down the road to a project, whether that's costs or schedule impacts, even turning over a building. You know, you definitely don't want to miss a deadline for that. You know, they have huge scheduled opening days that are scheduled way in advance. And so definitely when we do our stairs and rails, we're always wanting to put everybody in the same room, whether that's via Zoom or Teams, but we definitely try to get face-to-face, to be honest. But we want to make sure that we're making this a really personal relationship and engaging with their wants. A project that comes to mind is a project in New York. And the client had a stair that was going from the 25th floor all the way up to the 45th floor. Well, obviously in New York, you don't have a lot of real estate. And so you have to coordinate and figure out how do you get into this building? Mm-hmm. You know, and there were so many creative ways that they were thinking about, whether it was the window or going all the way up to the top of the skylight. And so we found ourselves utilizing the freight elevator. When that happens, you know, you have to make sure and coordinate with all parties. You know, what's X, Y, and Z of the elevator? You know, what time frame can I access the elevator? Mm-hmm. You know, where am I unloading the stair and rails? You know, what floor can I take it to? And what I mean by that is you do sometimes have occupancy in the floors, either below you or above you. And so you need to make sure that you're aware of that to make sure that you can only work through hours of, you know, six and six, you know. And so you have to be able to engage those conversations early and making sure everybody is on the same page and everybody has that same goal in mind. And so, you know, we had to make sure and cut the stairs up into a certain XYZ. There's obviously a weight capacity that could come into play as well as a factor. And then you're having to then put it on some type of gantry cart, roll it into play, you know, take it up to the appropriate floor and then roll it to the site. And even that can have its issues of its own, you know, having to go around walls, if there's drywall up, if there's doors that are too narrow or too short. And so there's so many variables that you really have to consider being able to move from A to B, and then obviously see yourself in that slab opening, cut opening of where your stairs are going to live.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. So on the technology front, I know you guys are leveraging advanced steel. And how are you guys leveraging that and maybe the partnership with Applied and Graytech as well?
Yeah, absolutely. So advanced steel is a software that I utilized about 7 years ago, started learning it. I really found the benefits of Advanced Steel to be powerful just because, first of all, it's already a stair and rail software. It's already for base building, structural buildings. You're able to utilize all the built-in components, that the macros that are already built into the software, you know. And the other thing, it's also an Autodesk product. And so it's built vertically on top of AutoCAD. And so when you're working with AutoCAD and Autodesk, you have access to other softwares that make it more powerful for technology. And I, one that comes to mind is Revit. You know, Revit is a huge coordinating software that you come together with all the other subcontractors and upload your models, and you're able to clash detect and make sure everybody's in the right spot, mm-hmm. in the right place, and making sure that you don't have other trays that are interfering. And then another thing that's really powerful with the Autodesk, that great tech, you know, with Advanced Steel, go hand in hand, is, you know, you have Recap. And so that's where the 3D scanning comes into play. That's where you upload your information. You can extrapolate all the data and then superimpose it over your model, which is an Advanced Steel. And so that all encompasses, just makes a really good workflow. And then the most powerful part for me is the automation of the drawings that get populated from it, right? So you're putting all this, all these parts and pieces together like a Lego set, right? We all enjoyed Legos as kids. And so you're putting all these 3D pieces together into a model, and it's naming it for you, right? It's giving it, it's A1, you know, A2, whatever nomenclature you may have in your company. But then it's automatizing it on the sheets. It's keeping count for it. It's putting it together where, you know, you don't have to, so to speak, check it. You are going to, right? But it's doing it all for you, right? And that's the technology part of it. It's thinking for you, right? It's doing it for you. There's a software in the background, a list that's running that'll do that for you. And I think that's just a powerful thing. We are also starting to incorporate Inventor as well with Graytek, mm-hmm. where we're doing the circular stairs, helical stairs in Inventor, and taking advantage of that technology as well, and more so just plugging it into the same model that we currently have now.
All right. So, Edward, as we start to kind of land the plane here, a couple of rapid fire questions for you. First, what does the phrase modeling the future, what does that mean and look like to you?
Modeling the future. It looks fun, put it that way. I'm really interested to see how technology is going to take us forward and propel us, especially in the construction world, especially being part of the modeling side of it, the modeling aspect of it. How much more is it really going to improve? You know, these softwares that we have now are so powerful as it is. I almost envision kind of like, you know, maybe these nibbles on our fingers, and you're just kind of moving it around, and that's how you would model in the future. You know, come to one thing that comes to mind, maybe like Iron Man, you know, how he puts it into the atmosphere in front of you, and he's just pulling things.
That would really be cool
to see. Maybe some VR that comes into play, where you have like you know, a library of parts, and you just grab them and stick them on right in front of you.
Yeah,
I mean, the efficiency with that, I think, comes into play for sure, right? Because you can see what does and doesn't work. But then also, I think like the end user would appreciate it too, because they can see their idea come into fruition, right? Mm-hmm. That they can see that right in front of them just getting built. I think that's something that could potentially happen. Am I the one to do it? No, but I, good luck to the ones that have to, right?
It'd be very cool.
It would be pretty cool.
So kind of like a offshoot of that question, what does innovation mean to you?
Innovation to me, innovative thinking or a way of doing things, is just, there's definitely standards, right? But, or rules, so to speak, too, right? But you want to just continue to break those or stretch those, or what can you do to make it better is what I would think innovative is, right? It's just making something that already it's functioning correctly, it's functioning well, but how can we improve on that? How can we enhance it?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, agreed. Well, how do people connect with you and find out more information on what's going on with Synergy?
Yeah, you can definitely reach me. I have a LinkedIn, and then also our website is www.synergy, and that's with an I, by the way, synergillc.com.
Perfect. Well, final question for you, Edward. If I could give you all power, you could snap your fingers and innovate one thing in the industry, what would you pick to innovate?
That's a good question. No RFIs, no change orders.
I like it.
I don't know what that would look like, but no, just a process that would allow that 1, 2, 3, 4, 5 always happens, right? But, you know, it doesn't, but that's okay. That's what makes this a really exciting industry to be a part of.
Nice. I like it. The no RFIs comes up a lot. So there's definitely some power and movement behind that one.
Yeah, well, very good. Very good.
Awesome.
As long as we're all thinking the same, right?
That's right. Well, Edward, thanks so much for taking the time and talking with us today.
Absolutely. Thanks, Todd, and you have a beautiful day.
And now it's time for my Todd takes from this episode. First take: emphasize the importance of finding a harmony between established traditional work methods and the adoption of innovative, technologically advanced approaches. This balance is key to maintaining efficiency and leveraging the best of both worlds. Second take: stress that technology should be seen as an enhancement to your existing processes, enriching the way we work rather than replacing the human element. It's about using technology wisely to support and improve our efforts. And final take: highlight the necessity of having open and honest discussions with all project stakeholders from the outset. Use the analogy of having the DTR, define the relationship, early to stress the importance of clarifying each person's roles, terms, and objectives as soon as possible. This approach helps prevent misunderstandings, reduces frustrations, and ensures smoother project execution. Thank you for listening to this episode. If you are interested in learning more, you can visit our sponsor, Applied Software Great Tech Group, at ASTI.com for more information. You can listen to this podcast anytime by simply going to Apple Podcasts, Spotify, YouTube, or wherever you listen to podcasts. Also, be sure to check out our website, bridgingthegappod.com. As always, I'm Todd Wyant, thanking you for joining the conversation to model the future on the Bridging the Gap podcast. Keep innovating. Bridging the Gap is hosted, directed, and produced by Todd Wyant. Edited and produced by Eric Daniel. Bridging the Gap is an Applied Software Great Tech Group production. Copyright Applied Software Great Tech Group 2024.